So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
In 2013, he was in his match with Randy Orton.
I did a suicide dive out of the ring.
Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton!
Oh, man. Orton sidestepping Bryan and launching him into the barricade.
But I think that was where I hurt my neck because I felt kind of a jolt go down my arm. And I can't move my arms.
I don't think Daniel realizes what's happened to him.
I think we all knew, especially those of us sitting at ringside, that he wasn't quite himself.
And then the doctors come over to me and they're like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. They're like, can you move your arm? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. But that's typical any athlete speak for he's probably not okay.
He's stopping it.
I'm only a man with a cable's got me. I'm taking a stand to escape what's inside me. A monster. I turned into a monster. And it keeps getting stronger. Can I clear my conscience?
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. It's Wednesday, Wei, and I'm still feeling the effects. Sunday night, we went out and watched WrestleMania, and it was the equivalent of a massive bender where we did shots and we just drank and drank. Mm-hmm. And then when we hit our limit, we went another 40 yep. minutes or so. And to cap off the night, we did a 27-minute series of drinks end the show as people were booing us and the walls came caving down. And we're still feeling that. 3 hours of Raw Monday night. I mean, there was a lot to discuss on Monday's Raw in Dallas, but no. I'm wiped away.
Yeah. There is such a thing as a WrestleMania hangover. It really is a real thing.
This is the first year I can say I've really felt like the day after on Monday, I just felt exhausted. And it was.
Isn't it weird that us not being there, and not being. Not doing all that traveling, all that running around, we actually get more tired covering the show from here.
It's a different kind of tired. I mean, when we have gone on those trips, like by the end of the trip, I'm pretty physically worn down. I can think of two times. When the week after, I got sick. And I very rarely get sick, but those trips just wipe me out, I should say.
Perhaps it's the energy of kind of being in the location as well. You're in a new place. There's always a lot of maybe sights to see.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess here we're still kind of in our daily routine, but just having to watch maybe four times, five times more wrestling than usual.
Do you think your opinion of WrestleMania, did you judge this year's show any different watching it as opposed to being there? Because I really feel if you were there in the building on Sunday night, that atmosphere is not something you can just throw out. That's the atmosphere of WrestleMania is generally one of the high points when you're there live. And I think at home, I mean, still quite amazing to see the big spectacle of WrestleMania, but I think you do.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Watch it maybe a little differently.
Absolutely. I think being there is a different layer of experience. Just as though I feel like if you watched in a room full of fans who really loved the show versus, watching in a room with fans who just all were very critical and hated the show, I think that would shape your experience too. But that being said, I feel like I watched this year's show very much the same as I watched last year's show, because last year, despite being there, we were behind glass, and we essentially were watching on TVs despite being, at the arena. We were watching in the press box.
Which was the case in Dallas this year. They were in an enclosed area behind glass.
Right. So, I mean, my opinion would have probably been very much the same. I was essentially watching on TVs both years.
There was only a 2-second delay this year instead of like a minute last year, which was nice. Just a mind fuck.
Yeah.
I watched on my laptop. The entire WrestleMania I watched on my laptop in the press box last year.
All the delayed reactions. But, 2 days, 2-3 days after, I would say my opinion's still pretty much the same.
It's been interesting to hear feedback to WrestleMania because I think there's two separate audiences that watch WrestleMania. And this year was the most clear distinction to me that for you and me, we watch this as a weekly show, much like a television show. And we place a high premium on storylines, character development, creating stars, week by week progression, like you would a Walking Dead, for instance.
This was our season finale.
In some ways, but also knowing that it's, yeah, I would say, sure, the season finale analogy would work. And then there's others that I've spoken to that they sit down, they watch WrestleMania, and they're watching it much closer to a Super Bowl or even a movie where it's self-contained and it's one night, and you watch that incredible spectacle. You see the names you remember fondly.
And a bunch of guys you have no idea.
A lot of them you maybe know or have only heard of, but you're not watching this for where is this going a month from now, 2 months from now. You're watching for this night. You didn't watch a whole ton of the buildup. You could walk away from Sunday's show and say, that was a lot of fun to watch. Mm-hmm. It was a gigantic spectacle, and you're watching it in a self-contained mindset.
Yeah.
So that's two totally different ways of how you're watching WrestleMania, and you put it best way that I thought on Sunday when you stated that the complaints for WrestleMania, I think, much more center around the booking than they do the matches. I would only categorize, I would think the worst match I watched that I was not enjoying was The Undertaker and Shane McMahon for the build-up to the stunt. And everything else on that show I classify as either good or above that. The matches were fine. I think it's the booking that is where people are critical of the show.
Yeah. I feel like there, in a best-case scenario, you have a show where you satiate both of those requirements. You satiate the need to peak your storylines and come out of those storylines benefiting a lot of your current roster while still also engaging and entertaining a lot of your casual fans. I feel like this show had the potential to do that, but I just felt like so many chances that they had to elevate current talent, they did not take, and they simply used those instead to create a big reaction using the legends for the casual fans, and that was my disappointment. But as a show overall, I thought it was an entertaining, self-contained show.
I'm in such a haze, I can't even remember if we went over these similar points on Monday's show or not.
I feel like we had this exact conversation on Monday.
Much like the WWE always says that some people watch Raw and never watch SmackDown, we also have to operate in that same mindset that maybe there is the Review of Raw listeners, Team Red, and the Review Away listeners, Team Blue.
Why don't we play a recap video of what you missed on Review of Raw right now?
We actually do that. It's called Raw in 3 Minutes.
Oh, yeah.
It airs every week at youtube.com/fightnetwork,
yes,
which you can always catch Raw in 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. So if you watched an exceedingly long WrestleMania and just didn't have it in you to put in 3+ hours on Monday night, we do it for you in 180 seconds, and it's every Tuesday morning.
And if you don't even have 3 minutes to watch that, well, we're going to debut Raw in
3 seconds.
3 seconds, yeah, or 30 seconds.
Review Raw for me.
Let's do 30 seconds first, and then we'll do the 3 seconds after a little while from that. Right now?
I don't know what you're looking at me for. Let's hold off on that.
Oh, you want to hold off on the 30-second and 3-second?
My memory is a little fuzzy of what happened on Raw.
All right.
Today we're going to be discussing a show that I swear to God happened 2 months ago, but it actually aired on Monday, mm-hmm, last week after Raw, the latest WWE 24 documentary entitled Thank You, Daniel.
Yeah, we were largely...
Was it Thank You, Brian, or Thank You, Daniel?
Thank You, Daniel, and that's one of my criticisms of the show.
Oh.
I mean, I understand, you know, it's the guy's gimmick name, but this show, it just felt so incredibly genuine, and I don't have an issue with them calling it Thank You, Daniel. I think my biggest concern when that actually became an issue is at the end, when you have all these performers who, throughout the course of the documentary, said some very genuine things about their friend, Bryan Danielson, somebody who I'm sure that in real life they will call Bryan Danielson. You have Brie Bella, the man's wife, saying, calls him Brian, obviously.
In fairness, she is identified as Brie Bella on this show, too.
Well,
this is the weird area where it's like, what is...
At least Brie is her name. But, like, in the end, they do, like, a sort of a cheesy thing where everybody looks into the camera and says, thank you, Daniel. And
wait, when I have a career-ending vocal cord injury, if you don't produce this similar video and everyone says, thank you, Pollock, thank you.
Yeah,
it was
very corny, but at the very least, your name is John Pollock, and we will be saying your real name.
Like, what would my name be? Paul Johnson, I guess, would be my
Paul
name.
Paul Johnson would be the joke name, yes. But thank you, Daniel, whatever, I understand. But I feel like they could have gotten away with still calling this show Thank You, Brian. And I feel like it would have been a bit more believable. But
I swear to God, I wrote here on my notes, thank you, Daniel, and I had no clue even what the name was, to be honest. So I didn't even know this was a point of contention, but I understand your point here. Interesting enough, this past Monday, after Raw ended, what they put on the network was the newest episode of Ride Along. And I understand it's a new episode and you're pushing it, but... To me, that's kind of a prime spot. The Monday, the biggest Raw of the year, your biggest audience. I mean, maybe there is a certain...
Who's on the ride?
I don't know. I didn't watch it. It doesn't really matter who was on it.
I mean, if it was somebody...
Steve Austin, the two baby faces of WrestleMania 32. But
if it was Vince McMahon and Triple H, I'd watch
fair
that.
Fair enough, yes. And maybe... You know, I'm kind of going against my previous point of there being too much. I don't know if we necessarily needed something massive on the network after all of this.
Yeah.
But it is the biggest Raw of the year, and I've said it before, the idea that is when you could do an Austin podcast with almost like a postmortem of WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be – to me, it would be an interesting discussion to have. That's the one year, the one interview of the year that Vince McMahon does on the network.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly it's going to be skewed or whatever, but I think you'd get a lot of news out of it regardless, whether Vince is praising the show. I think the guy would be, I think we'd at least get a lot to talk about coming out of it. And that would be something that for people that only signed up for the network for WrestleMania, that had it in their mindset, well, I'm canceling it the next day or I'm not keeping it for the full month. At least it's something that once it progresses your interest in keeping it.
And if not Vince, I feel like even somebody like Hunter is very much somebody in that role now of kind of, I mean, he's the authority, right? Who can really legitimately speak to how the company might feel or defend certain actions of the show.
In fact, I'm almost positive when they aired the commercial few months back of the newest programming coming up, did they not mention The Undertaker would do Austin's podcast at some point?
I didn't catch that.
I thought they did.
I don't know.
I could be mistaken.
I'll tell you what,
but
I want.
That is the time to do it to me.
I'll tell you what I want to see, though, is a ride-along in the corporate jet. How about that?
That would be something.
Yeah.
Maybe after the Mania weekend and Michael Hayes and Linda are in the jet and Michael Hayes is maybe in a bit of a haze.
Well, he just sang. He did a 40-minute speech and then sang. So
maybe
sure he's still on that high.
Yeah, so, some urine on the corporate jet, maybe. That was a story show about almost peeing on Linda on the jet. I think.
I get it.
Well, maybe Jimmy Garvin could be flying the plane because he is a pilot.
Yeah. Oh my God! There you go. Perfect.
This is a great idea. Fly along.
Yes.
Okay. We go back now to thank you, Daniel.
Yes.
Correct. Thank you, Daniel.
So these WWE 24 specials, they do them pretty...
There's no timetable for them. It's
whenever. When. They did one last year for WrestleMania. They did one for the Usos.
They did one for Booker T.
Yeah. So whenever they feel like it.
NXT basically. Brooklyn. Yes.
And the framework is very much like the UFC Countdown specials or 24/7. Well, they will take a 24 period of a significant event in WWE to frame around a larger story.
Yes. And this one all centered around the February 8th edition of Raw from Seattle. It started off with Brian and Brie arriving at the arena. And there's a sit down with Brian as he's kind of taking us through his day. and how it takes him back to his first introduction to pro wrestling when it was introduced to him in grade school, in first grade. And one thing they did really great on this piece was speaking to a lot of people with personal connections to Brian, including Seth Rollins, who you could see just idolized this man. And
did he dress up as him, you think, for Halloween?
You know what? The funny thing is, like, Seth Rollins was young enough that he was probably watching some Bryan Danielson tapes in the early 2000s.
How old is he?
Seth Rollins?
Like, what's their age difference?
Let's get this. There's nothing I hate more than incorrect ages being revealed here. Seth Rollins is 29 years old, so that means...
6 years younger?
6 years younger. But in 2002, when you would first see Brian tapes circulated,
15?
He would have been around 15. So
too old to dress up for Halloween, though.
I dressed up for Halloween last year. So
oh, did you?
I mean,
but if you're 15-year-old, you're not dressing up as some brand new wrestler.
If you got those maroon trunks and knee pads,
oh my god,
boots, maybe.
All right,
or the masked American Dragon.
I hope Seth Rollins gets to wrestle every person he's ever dressed up as.
Do you remember Rollins, massive Harry Potter fan?
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, you didn't do that when we did this profile when we went to a Ring of Honor show. I want to say 2009, and we did these little sit downs with various talent, and one of them was a young Tyler Black, as his name was at the time in Ring of Honor, and we did this piece, and I ended up talking to him about Harry Potter and why he was such a big fan of it, and we turned it around, and I remember I either sent the video to him later or something, and he replied. He just loved the video. He like thanked
Harry
us.
Potter.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
So there you go. He was a Harry Potter fan. Other ones: Paul Heyman, Chris Jericho, of course, Brie Bella, Michael Cole, AJ Styles, John Cena, and Corey Graves. Who it's notable because, of course, he had very similar end to his career with concussion issues and being forced into retirement.
And I'm sure the two had a lot of interactions on the indies too, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, he was never, you know, a mainstay in, like, Ring of Honor, for instance, but I'm sure they crossed paths throughout their time on the independents. And one quote that certainly stood out was Brian noting that he's still not ready to be done. And that was kind of subtly discussed throughout this whole thing of this was Brian very much – this was not a choice that he was making on his own volition. I think he understood why he needed to do this, but if all things were equal and he were left to make this decision, I think he would have been wrestling.
And Brian also reveals – or Daniel also reveals that Vince had only called that week and asked him if he wanted to retire on the Monday's Raw. And it was repeatedly mentioned that the decision to make this speech on this particular episode of Raw in his hometown was a very last-minute decision.
Yeah, he said he got the call the Sunday before this Raw in Seattle, and he said he had to think about it. I mean, you're getting, you know, just over 24 hours notice that, hey, we want you to retire tomorrow in this massive setting, and we want your entire life to change tomorrow night on Raw.
Yeah. It reminds me of the time where my parents forced me to move out of my room, like with like maybe like a day's notice, because they had to put in new floors.
Oh, man.
So
this is exactly like his prediction.
Just like this, yeah. So I basically, this room I grew up in my whole life, I had to take everything off, took down my Weezer poster.
And, oh man.
I just like my. It felt like my whole world was all of a sudden being ripped out in place of laminate flooring. So I'm sure that's what Daniel Bryan felt.
And what did they turn this room into?
They just moved me into my brother's room because he had moved out. So,
but what was occupying?
It's just basically a storage room right now. Yeah.
So did your mom ever like invite you to come into this storage area, and you had to say, "Listen, it's just."
Like give a speech.
I can't be around this room right now.
Yes. No, she did not do that. No.
So that's that's the analogy of the week. Way moving out of his room.
Yeah.
So we go back then after the call's made, and
it was actually Brie who helped Brian be able to make this decision, acknowledging that there would be no better city to do this in than Seattle, which is accurate.
Very accurate.
Yeah. I mean, certainly it was important that, yeah, this was happening in Seattle, which, I mean, that moment in his speech where he's pointing to where his dad was during that Slammy award-winning or Slammy award edition of Raw. I mean, that was – I mean – if you had a dry eye, I'd be stunned.
He also mentioned, you know, some of the choices being Chicago or Brooklyn, which are, of course, a couple of the dates leading up to WrestleMania. And
right, yeah. So, I mean, they could have done this on later going into Mania. And to be honest, I mean, there's no – Seattle, of course, the obvious place to do this in. It's not like this would have been any less emotional, though I think watching had it been in any of these cities.
For sure.
He would have got an unbelievable similar reception in any city.
But at the same time, I feel like Seattle really was the right call because, you know, you wouldn't want to get in the way of what was supposed to be the focus of the Chicago and Brooklyn shows, and that's the build for WrestleMania.
That's true. I think it would have been – I mean – yeah, like it, had they I can't even imagine them doing something like that on the final Raw before WrestleMania, because I can't imagine that would have been your final segment and Brian would have been given the time, and I would have hated for this speech to have been
It would have totally overshadowed,
constrained by time.
Would have also totally overshadowed what the purpose of the Go Home show is to.
Yeah,
to
you would have left on a really down note with Brian, and I don't feel he would have gotten, you know, an open mic and unlimited time to go out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would have been really not an afterthought. I think it actually would have overshadowed quite a lot. So then we go into the day, and of course, if you forget, that Monday during the day, that's when Brian tweeted out that he would be announcing his retirement on Raw that night, and of course, that was all the speculation instantly was, is this legitimate or not? And that's, I mean, in professional wrestling, that's always going to be a knee-jerk reaction.
There was a great scene. Of course, he goes into the arena and the cameras follow him as he's saying essentially his goodbyes to a lot of the roster. There's a great scene where he encounters Mark Henry, and he's basically telling Mark Henry how, after he made the announcement earlier today, that on Twitter everybody's telling him to pull a Mark Henry in reference to the fake retirement.
Yes, and even showing Brian the photo that they had photoshopped his face, onto Mark Henry's body with the salmon jacket.
It was a really nice moment because, I mean, you and I, that was only several weeks back where I think the whole wrestling community, wrestling fan community, you know, saw these same tweets and had these exact same reactions. But it was cool seeing the actual performers themselves react to these same memes and everything.
Yeah. Rollins noted here, Brian did not have a choice in the matter. And then we got reactions from various talent, some of which were being told of this on camera in the moment. We had Darren Young, Zack Ryder, Becky Lynch, Chris Jericho, and then others which were sit-downs, which were not done. It didn't feel like on that day.
I really like seeing those candid reactions from the talent because it gave the sense that, I mean, they were all these guys were fans and reacting the same way just like a fan would upon hearing this news.
Zack Ryder probably thought this was material for Swerved.
Perhaps.
Going to do a mock retirement.
He probably thinks the money in the or the IC title win is a part of Swerved.
This is going to be
very
the big
elaborate
thing.
Yeah.
He gets back and he's told you're dropping it in a month.
The belt like has like a shock buzzer on it, so and it evaporates or something. I don't know.
We had sit downs with Corey Graves, Cesaro, Kevin Owens, Triple H, Kane, Seth Rollins, as we noted here, and then it was just a lot of Brian processing all this backstage. He's around all of these people, and of course, he hasn't been on the road, so. It's weird. He's like catching up with these people, but it's the signal that my career is now over. I'm now not even looking at when I'm going to be back. I know I'm not. And they had a moment here with Ric Flair, and Ric Flair, with the least stunning news ever revealed, stated that he cried the day he retired. And everyone is very aware of that.
Ric Flair cried probably driving to the arena.
Like Ric Flair has probably withdrawn more liquid than he has blood in his career. from his eyes.
I don't. That's a very good. That's an interesting.
That would be an interesting ratio.
Stat, yeah.
To compare
blood to tears ratio.
I mean, but I just it was just the way in which like Ric Flair. It was almost as though he were like, you know, revealing something private to Daniel Bryan.
You're not
like,
going to believe this, Daniel.
On the day I retired, I cried, man. I cried. I'm not ashamed to say it. Bryan then met with Mark Henry, and then he's by ringside with Cole and JBL. And then we rewind to WrestleMania 30, which will always be positioned as the high point of his career, winning the title from Randy Orton and Batista, and his family being in the ring, and Connor at ringside, and the backstage reaction to everybody who...
This little portion might have been a little tricky for the producers of this documentary because this was already something that was very much covered in the previous Daniel Bryan documentaries. But I thought they did a good job of kind of telling a more of a separate angle. And they shot so much footage from that night that we saw a lot of it that we didn't get to see in the last time.
Think of all of this that we have seen. You know, over the last, I guess it would be 2 years at this point, but you mentioned the 24 on WrestleMania weekend.
We really had doubts about even doing this show because we've done so much on Daniel Bryan.
I mean,
already.
There was that. There was his book that came out, the DVD that came out, this, of course, and everything has different news attached to it. And I think one of the things that I don't mind going back to this is that Daniel Bryan is such a sincere individual that it never. I always feel this guy is being so honest with everyone that I feel compelled here that it's like this guy will give you the honest insight and story of what went on here. He's not going to give you a wrestling bullshit tale.
And I really feel like that's part of the key of why he has become such an attractive babyface. It's not just because he's one of the best wrestlers of all time. It's because he is genuine. I think that's such a key to being a compelling babyface is you have to feel like you're not lying to people. And I think you earn people's trust that way, and he's managed to really do that.
And, I mean, all these stories coming out of WrestleMania 30 are known, but just the way it was described that here he wins the title, then he goes and he gets married the Friday after WrestleMania. And talked about that being the greatest moment of his life.
Before we even get to that, I talked a bit about like them having all this footage from that night, not necessarily using all of it the last time. There's a really touching moment here of right after the win, Bryan talking to Connor ringside, the kid.
Yeah,
and they even subtitle what Bryan actually says to Connor, and he's telling Connor how you're the man, Connor. You helped me win tonight, and that's something that they didn't put in that last documentary that I thought was a really touching moment on this one.
Yeah, and that led to just everything that happened after his wedding, coming back from his honeymoon to learn that his father passed away on a Monday morning, and Bryan then appearing on Raw that night, as you recall, and described his dad as his best friend. Then shortly after that, it was the passing of Connor. And then finding out he needs neck surgery while he has the title and just all of this together. I mean, this is just what a incredibly sad period after two incredible highs, a professional and personal moment that he had during that week with his wedding and Mania before that.
Yeah. In framed that way, his story becomes incredibly interesting and almost poetic. But I would say this is where kind of this documentary picks up where the last one left off, covering the last one basically ended at WrestleMania, but this one kind of picks up where the tragedy begins, and that's kind of what this documentary I felt was about. And he, Daniel Bryan just speaks very honestly about these events that had happened right after this WrestleMania win.
In some ways, I thought my biggest takeaway from this whole documentary was the next discussion of his 2013 television match with Randy Orton, where he describes delivering the suicide dive, and that was when his arm went numb, could not move it, and at the time, it became a big story because the match got called off and Brian just lost it on Paul Levesque backstage, and the story was outlined in his book.
He was pissed, and he mentioned that. And to illustrate that, they found some clip of him obviously staged, of him walking backstage and kicking like this box of crates down.
WWE B-roll at its finest. Yeah. Got to cover everything. But, I mean, if there's something I have looked at with Bryan Danielson, I think this man is just such a level-headed individual. I really believe he's a very intelligent individual, super talented. But I've also looked at, here's a guy that does understand so much long-term and is aware of issues health-wise and such, and yet here's somebody that I remember at the time, and it's like you watch him want to continue this match, and then you hear like a year ago, and he's describing that he was trying to work a style where he wouldn't need his arm to come back and make his comeback a year ago, and then he comes back, and you remember that half Nelson suplex he takes from Luke Harper, and it's like, what is this guy doing? Yeah. And it was I was very relieved to hear this, because he discusses when he got that injury and was telling the ref he was fine, and he said that was just typical athlete speak. And for the first time, I was able to hear this guy take himself out of the performer and assess himself as, like, it should not be my job to have to end a match, and this probably was the right call, and it was simply pride. That was why I wanted to continue. Mm. And the match was called off, and of course, being that it was Hunter who called it off, naturally you go back to his torn quad, both of them, in which he continued the match. It was 2001. It was also 2007 he continued the match. So, I mean, somewhat different injuries here.
Yeah, I mean,
at the same time,
I feel like a head injury is always a bit more severe.
Of course. Well, I mean, this was like his arm had gone numb. Like, this was certainly concerning you're talking about the neck and, you know, going numb. But, like, I hate the mentality that you have to finish the match. I just think it's such a relic to the past, and it's like, I get the locker room mentality, of course, but that decision should be taken off of them, because no individual is going to want to have to lose face and call their own match off. And that's why your Paul Levesque and your referees here, they have to be the bad guy in these situations and take that decision away. Because I don't care what match you're having, neck damage, possible paralysis. It's insane.
It's not worth it. To play devil's advocate, though, I mean, look at how they've built the legend of, you know, somebody like a Triple H for battling through that quad tear and finishing the match, or how they it's encouraged. You know, without saying so, it really is encouraged to continue a match through injury. As a performer, I think everybody kind of wants to show that they have that level of toughness. And so I do understand it, but I think you're right. It's up to the company to just say no to a lot of guys. But at the same time,
get the performer's side who, I mean, they will counter my argument by saying, you're not an athlete. You don't understand. I'm not an athlete, and I'm not going to ever understand that perspective fully. But I totally get this is your job, and you just, that's ingrained in you. You finish this.
That was also some SmackDown match. So in the end, who cares? If it was maybe a WrestleMania main event, I would say, okay, maybe, but to end the SmackDown match, is that really a big deal?
So then we get into the ongoing neck and head issues with Daniel Bryan. We have Dr. Chris Amon, who told him he would eventually need surgery, and Bryan put it off. And by putting it off, it allowed him to do WrestleMania, because there was a good chance if he went under the knife, he would miss WrestleMania in New Orleans. He ended up having the surgery after WrestleMania, and his recovery time was tabbed at 6 to 8 weeks. And after that time, he still was not regaining any strength in his hand and arm, and he was doing physical therapy all day long, and it ended up resulting in his title being vacated, and he would not work again in 2014 after all of that momentum coming out of WrestleMania, and would not return until early 2015, where, of course, he came in, went into the Royal Rumble, and then ended up in that IC title ladder match at last year's WrestleMania.
Yep.
And then it goes into the concussion he received, which occurred, and this was the first time I believe it was revealed that it did in fact happen at a SmackDown taping in Dallas, Texas, at the American Airlines Center, the host of Raw from this past Monday night, in a six-man tag with Daniel Bryan, Dolph Ziggler, and Roman Reigns taking on Sheamus, Big Show, and Wade Barrett. And the concussion occurred. It was...
He didn't tell anybody, but he went to talk to Brie.
Yes, he went, he talked to Brie, and...
Brie could tell something was wrong.
Yes, and that spot was also edited off of SmackDown that week, so that shot to the head was not shown. So they had to have known that there was something was up. Whether it was officially diagnosed as a concussion or not, that was not stated on this documentary. But Bryan was then immediately sent on the European tour, and he proceeded to do another 3, 6, 7 matches over the course of the next week, the majority of which were six-mans, and then the final match, April the 14th in England, teaming with John Cena against Cesaro and Tyson Kidd. And Bryan was extremely limited and left to just tags near the end, using the yes lock. So
was that his last match?
The last match was him and Cena against Cesaro and Tyson Kidd, April the 14th of last year. Mm-hmm. And then he was sent home early from the tour, and it was kept extremely under wraps about what it was. People were speculating, was it a concussion? Was it a neck injury? And Dave Meltzer reported on this at the time, and the WWE actually contacted him, stating it was not a concussion, which now we know it was. So
what the fuck?
That is where a lot of questions come out of this. And the fact that, okay, at the very least, there was concern after the tag match in Texas, and they limited his involvement in these six-man tags. Mm-hmm. However, he was still sent overseas, did participate for all of these matches before finally sending him home after the April 14th show, and that will go down, well, at least for now, as his last match. I never rule out anything in pro wrestling, but
yeah,
that, as of now, is his last match. So, I mean, that part is really not discussed, other than the fact that he states it was the Texas match before the tour of the UK where he suffered the concussion. And Brie, when she was in Europe on the tour, she was the one speaking to Bryan and realized he was not all there. And
they also mentioned how Brie, in her interview, talked about how he had promised Brie that the next time he had a concussion, he would come clean to the office about his concussion history. And this was when the seizures were brought up.
Yes.
And it's really interesting to think about, you know, what Bryan Danielson's story would be if he didn't have Brie Bella with him on the road. This person, his wife, you know, basically there to be... To put this almost psychotic drive to wrestle in check. You know what I mean? If he didn't have his wife around to watch out for all these things, I wonder if any of this stuff would have ever been reported.
Yeah, you could only speculate as to how the WWE medical staff, Dr. Joseph Maroon, would have diagnosed Bryan had he not come clean about having these post-concussion seizures, which he stated he had had 4, and it's been reported the last one had been in 2012. So this wasn't something that was reoccurring at the time, but he came clean with them, and he went through all these tests. He said brain MRIs, EEGs, neuropsychological testing, and all of it came back. He passed these tests, but Dr. Maroon just would not clear him because of his history, and therefore Bryan went out to get other opinions. He went to the UCLA Medical Center. He was cleared. Maroon still would not clear him. Then he went to New York, and this was the crossroads because he went to the Evoke Neuroscience outlet, which they had been profiled on Inside MMA with this new concussion test that they were implementing that the Longo and Weidman gym had started using, and they had Ali Aquint on it. And it was essentially where you would be hooked up to this machine and it would be testing different reaction times, and it was able to better monitor the brain activity, response times, and the goal being to find out when it was the right time to get back to sparring after a fight, for instance.
It was interesting to hear Brian talk about this moment in his career where he, at this point, his struggle and his number one goal was, you know, not to have a great match or to, you know, really train to come back. His goal was to find as many doctors as possible who would clear him so that he could present to the company, hey, look at all these doctors, professionals that are saying I'm ready. Only your guy is telling me I'm not. So it seemed like this was quite the war between Brian and Dr. Baroon that was really all taking place behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. And if you do want to hear more about this Evoke Neuroscience, I interviewed Dr. James Thompson, who is with Evoke Neuroscience, and talked about this EVOX system, which is the test Brian took on the MMA report right around this time back in February, if you want to check that out. But when he got the results of this test, that was where they found issues with the area of the brain that causes seizures, and it confirmed Maroon's issues and hesitancy to clear Brian. And this was kind of where Brian realized there is a problem. And did you get the actual technical term he stated? It was a bit of a mouthful.
No.
From the, like, the temporal, it was a, like a partial lesion on the temporal
lobe. Let's just go with lobe.
All right. It was the part of the brain that causes seizures that they found some kind of issue. And this is where Brian stated he cried and didn't want to retire but knew he had to.
Mm-hmm.
So this test informed him there was an issue. Now, it's never stated that this whoever tested him in New York told him to retire. It seemed like here is the data. And
he knew the result if he had presented this. I mean, this was the end of his goal to try to get as much proof as possible that he was ready. He instead found proof that he was certainly not ready.
Yeah. And I mean, it came across like this was something that you might not have any problems from this. Maybe this will heal.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Thank God that you found it right now.
Yeah.
Before anything did happen.
So it was enough that it still felt like this was – they left it in Brian's hands here to make this decision, but the WWE was saying, listen, we are not clearing you.
Yeah.
And this was the crossroads.
Now, if he had if he was wrestling for a different company, if he was wrestling for a TNA, if he was wrestling for New Japan, or if this was a different time in the WWE's span of you know, how they handle health. I'm sure
Aware of all of Brian's history, you could even throw that in, even their present day tests. I mean, look at these other doctors who they saw him and they cleared him. They were comfortable in clearing him, like legitimate medical doctor, the UCLA doctor. There was the NFL doctor that he met with, I believe, with the Arizona Cardinals, like reputable doctors that said he was okay to return.
Yeah. So, you know, but I think the argument is that it really is for the better that the company is this careful. And, you know, you can argue that it's due to timing, but this guy has to retire at this point due to something like this.
So once the decision is made, then we are now into the day of Raw and him getting ready for this. And we see Brian meet with Vince McMahon and Michael Hayes in an office, and essentially Vince is telling him he'll have an open mic. And his only request is that he ends the speech with a yes chant.
Yeah, thinking obviously as a producer of the show, wanting to close the show.
And Brian just jokes, maybe not all that jokingly, that he will never do this yes thing ever again after tonight. He might be sick of this.
Vince is like, don't you dare. Just getting back to that New York method of testing. Since that was able to find something that so many other doctors weren't able to, do you think that the WWE should be using that form of testing for all their talent?
I think that this is a test that certainly I think you need to expand it and have more people taking it, to, because it seems like – like I don't know all the nuts and bolts of the methodology, but it's measuring certain things that clearly others are not. And I think at the very least it's giving you more information and more data to work with, and whether it's measuring different parts of the brain reaction time, I think it would be a test that – I mean, if it's able to reveal certain things, I don't see why not. I think that it's something that you would want a lot of people to be tested for. And that brought up this issue at the time of how many people on that active roster would want to know that.
Yeah.
Like, think about yourself if you are a veteran that has had concussions.
Making
do
all
you
this,
want to know?
Making all this money.
Sure. Like, yeah. Brian, you can – listen, we can't state this as fact, but – Brian hiding things, could that have prolonged his career? That's a totally valid question to ask.
And if given
because it's not like Dr. Joseph Maroon conducted this Evox test.
And if given the choice, do you think he would have sacrificed more of his health in order to have many more years of wrestling? And I think the answer is yes, clearly, if you just left it up to him.
I'm I'm certain there are a lot of performers out there who probably know – My brain has certainly been damaged in wrestling. I am probably pretty certain of that. But I don't need to know that hard data in front of me that I have a lot of issues with my head, that I'm guaranteed I'm going to have problems later on. You might not want to know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I totally get that.
I mean, even outside of wrestling, I feel like a lot of people with maybe a terminal illness would not want to know about it.
Now, it's one thing for the performer to not want to know that. If you are the company that is overseeing them, it should probably be – you should be adamant that
of course,
as the employer do need to know that.
Because you're liable.
Of course. Mm-hmm. So we continue on with the day of, and we hear from Cesaro and Rollins talking about how emotional it was, and it's clear that Brian is really just trying to struggle with this decision being made, and now you have to go out on national television and give this speech. And then we go to Brian coming out, and he's just trying not to cry, but everyone is coming up to him before the speech and like hugging him, giving him words of encouragement, which is actually, he says, making it more difficult for him because he's got to go through with all of this. So the talent was all watching this backstage, and he's discussing everything in the ring. And as he's describing his dad passing away, they cut to Cody Rhodes backstage, who is tearing up, certainly sharing that. And they show his family at ringside, Brie then coming down after the speech. And I mean, it only just happened, but this speech again, Way, is to me, it will be one of the most memorable segments I've ever seen.
Yeah, one of the greatest speeches of all time in professional wrestling, in my opinion. It was funny, it was emotional, and it was perfectly from the heart. And I think watching this moment at the time was emotional enough, but to see it kind of in this cinematic form with all the sad music in the background and cutting to Bree's reactions and everybody's reactions watching backstage, it was some very emotional TV. But, you know, again, you watch this. I thought of it at the time. I even think more so now. This was really – you can't ask for a more perfect way to cap off a career. How many guys get this opportunity to go on Raw in the main event segment with as much time as possible, as you want, a live mic to just speak to your audience and say goodbye? How many guys just leave their careers without even saying a word or you know, maybe just get fired and maybe have a few matches on the indies and just kind of fizzle out?
Yeah, and that's it ends with Brian, I mean, in typical Brian fashion, I think just being brutally honest about his situation. He doesn't know his plans for the future. He says the wound is too fresh to be part of the WWE right now, being offered. I mean, he probably has his pick of pretty much any position he wants that they will accommodate. They had offered him a color commentary spot last year. I'm sure a training spot would be there for him. He can be in the company in whatever capacity outside of an active performer, you would assume.
Cameraman.
if he so chose.
That's what he's,
yes. Yeah. And he compares it to a breakup and the person still wanting to be friends, but he just needs space right now. And that kind of takes us into the present, which is a lot of questions surrounding what the relationship is with Bryan and the WWE. He was advertised for the Daniel Bryan Appreciation Night at Madison Square Garden, WrestleMania weekend he was scheduled for, and for a VIP signing, and the European tour, and he's been taken off all of it. And the company line was that he had requested time off, and he's being granted it. And certainly there's tons of questions regarding what is it really yeah. just Bryan wants the time off? Because he had agreed to all of this. He was advertised for it, and then it was the week of the MSG show that he was taking off all of it.
I feel like it says a lot about, I mean, it could be something more than that, but I mean, if you, as a fan, just kind of armchair booking the reason why that might be watching this, you would assume that it would be because the guy just simply didn't want to be around everything to do with professional anything to do with professional wrestling this weekend, you know, and watching this, you could understand why this man has this intense love of professional wrestling that I don't think you and I will ever understand, or anybody even listening will ever understand.
I don't doubt there's going to be a period of just depression for him.
I'm sure.
In terms of what is next.
He's going through.
You're a 36-year-old man, yeah. And everything you have been working in since 1999, that is now done.
Mm-hmm. So, a really great documentary. Full of talking points. And I really had to fight back my tears watching this at work because it was a very emotional piece of TV. I mean, at one point the cleaning lady came in to talk and I was just like, "Hi, how's it going?" I just couldn't make eye contact. It was just, my eyes were watery.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I think that it certainly put a lot of light onto the last year of Daniel Bryan's health and a lot of questions that do come out of it in terms of how it was handled, too, the concussion that he suffered in Texas. And I think you can look back, and I'm kind of astounded he was sent on that European tour.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we don't know how much they knew. I mean, I'm sure they knew a little bit, but I don't know if they knew. But, well, I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think a great glimpse into a lot of the events surrounding that period. And again, really, I feel like any upcoming babyface or even politicians should watch how Daniel Bryan speaks and take lessons from that, because he is just such a genuine and likable speaker, and you never get the sense that he's trying to hide anything or trying to trick anybody or trying to politic in anything that he's trying to say. And I think he just – it's a real talent to be able to speak that confidently and as genuinely with nothing to hide. And as a result, I think he becomes incredibly likable.
Bernie Sanders running mate.
I think he would have a chance, Daniel Bryan.
Yes, we can.
Yeah. He'd be, I don't know if he might be too vegan.
I don't know how politics and him would necessarily mesh, real politics.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the Green Party.
Possible. I don't know. So there you go. That was a look at the WWE's 24 documentary. And next week on the show, we are going to do one of our classic retrospective looks.
Yeah, and I guess this week it's just more because we don't want to watch any more WWE.
We got to dial it back a little. Okay, we've absorbed quite a lot over the last week. So next week it is.
I'm sure our audience doesn't want to watch anymore. Like, why would anybody at this point want to watch some bullshit April pay-per-view for no reason?
Bullshit April pay-per-view.
WWE bullshit? Yeah. That's what they should change the name to.
Payback.
No, it's too much at this point. Maybe we'll leave that for next week. So instead, or the week after that. So next week.
Next week, we are going to take a look at Shinsuke Nakamura, the the hot flavor of the WWE world debuting at the TakeOver special, and we're going to leave it up to you. We're going to review maybe five or six matches next week encompassing his career, and we're going to leave it to you to post in the comment section at lawradio.proboards.com in this thread for review away. Throw out some suggestions of matches involving Shinsuke Nakamura that you would like to see. And then on this week's Ask Away video, we will announce the lineup of matches that we're going to review next week and take a look at the career of Shinsuke Nakamura, because there's probably some people that knew of the name Shinsuke Nakamura but maybe are just seeing him for the first time now that he is in NXT and working with the likes of Elias Sampson. So next week, we'll take a look at Nakamura. So that should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's great for me, too. I've seen a lot of him, but I haven't seen a lot of what he's done. So I look forward to your suggestions, and I had a great time doing these types of retrospectives in the past. And please join me as I learn more about this very interesting man.
All right, so that's going to be on next week's edition of Review Away, and then Ask Away will be up on
Friday.
At youtube.com/liveaudiowrestling, which you can go subscribe for free. You get all of our latest videos, including the video version of Reviewer Raw, Wrestling Observer Extra with Dave Meltzer every Monday morning, interview clips, and of course, Ask Away every Friday, where this week, not only will we reveal the Shinsuke Nakamura matches, we are also going to go over the results of the WrestleMania prop bets.
I think I did okay.
I dedicated Tuesday to going back and doing all of the data and recording what happened.
So you said,
how long was America the Beautiful?
Yep.
You will find out on Friday.
And you were able to accurately count how many beers Steve Austin opened?
I needed a magnifying glass, Way.
Wow.
I had to check it out.
And you were able to count all the McMahons? That was the other one.
That they really, clearly Shane McMahon watched that video and decided for his entrance.
Screw with John Pollock.
Screw with him. Yeah. So there you have it. That's going to wrap up this edition of Review Away. Your home is liveaudiowrestling.com. You don't have to pay rent, and you can stay as long as you'd like.
No, I won't make you move out to put in flooring.
We have fresh meals every single day in the form of our audio that you can digest, and then later...
Shit. Us out. Yes.
That is the end. WrestleMania week is over. Good night, good luck, and we'll speak with you later this week.
I don't really know what my plans are for the future yet. I'm still trying to figure that out. People have talked to me about being involved in WWE. Right now, it's too fresh. Like, the wound is too fresh. It's like being in love with somebody, right? And then they break up with you. And then they get married to somebody else. And they're like, no, but we can still be best friends. Well, yeah. But I just need some space.